The nearest one seems an ocean away from my position. I reach the window and squat down in hiding. I hear murmured sounds, and it takes me a moment to gather the courage to look up. The drapes are partially drawn, leaving a slice of an opening. I see Thomas clearly. He is standing, giving me his side profile. He is wearing black drawstring pajamas and is bare-chested. Holy fuck. He's almost naked. He is not huge, but tall and sleek, each muscle defined and curled. My eyes travel from his cheek down to the tendon of his neck, merging into his strong shoulders. The veins of his toned arms flicker as he opens and closes his fist. His wedding band shines against his pants. He's got an artist's body, mysterious terrains, moody sheets of muscles that are tightened right now. The murmurs are hard to place. Words run together. Their voices are low, but the strain is unmistakable. I catch something about Nikki, about leaving him alone, about going somewhere for a few days. All of this in Hadley's high-pitched feminine voice. I don't know what Thomas says to that, but he's agitated. He plows a hand through his hair, pulling on the contours of his ribs and stomach. Looking at him like this, his body on display, made of hard muscles, he seems unbreakable. Ugh, how stupid to think that. He is breakable, more fragile than even his wife Hadley. She can break him into pieces, mangle him, leave him ruined if she wants. No one can save him. But we want to. We just want to kiss him. One kiss. As if my one kiss will magically cure his wounded heart. As if he'll even want to kiss someone like me. Besides, this isn't what I'm supposed to be thinking about. I'm not here to perv over him. I'm here to see him. Without his usual bullshit. I'm here to see someone else like me. A flash of yellow. A nightgown passes through until it disappears. The murmurs stop. The silence is thick and dark. Thomas faces away from the window, giving me a glimpse of his back. It's tight and strained. What were they talking about? He shifts his stance and picks up an empty vase, his fingers fisting around its sleek neck. He raises his arm, getting ready to throw it in anger. I'm already cringing at the impending crash, but at the last moment, he sets the vase down and walks out, following her. Always following her. Chapter 10. It's Saturday, and I'm sitting at Creme and Beans. My table is slouched under the myriad of books I picked up from the bookstore last week. I've got another confession to make. No, it's not something horrendous or criminal like stalking or peeping through the window. Here it is. I bought some books on poetry after Thomas told me to give up on it. They're supposed to teach you how to be a poet. Things like technique and form and syllables and types of verses. It's all very intimidating and foreign-looking. I'm so engrossed in the debate regarding the importance of blank space in a poem. It is as important as the words themselves, apparently, that I'm caught off guard at the strong waft of chocolate and something spicy. My fingers heat up, and I find Thomas peering down at me. He's got a mug of coffee and a pastry bag in his hand, and the most devastating thing is the baby strapped to his chest, facing out. Nikki is kicking his legs and nibbling on his fist as he looks around the room. Thomas's hand is splayed on his tummy in a protective gesture. Dear God, this man is sexy. Thomas is staring down at my book, and I try to slide it toward me, inch by inch. But he puts his coffee and pastry aside, bends with Nikki still secure, and drags it back to the center of the table. Smirking, he pins me with his gaze.
What are you doing?
Nothing, I grumble, and try to tug the book away from his hold, but his hand is like a rock. Let it go. He does, and I jerk back in my chair with the force, earning a soft chuckle from Thomas. He takes a seat then. I can't look away from the expert ways holding Nikki, safe and secure against his chest. His chest that I saw naked last night. Don't think about it. But my shameless heart doesn't listen, and I'm bombarded with flashes of my adventure. I press my lips together. If I'm not careful, I'll end up blurting it all out. Thomas can never find out what I saw. Never. He sips his coffee and fishes the pastry out of the bag. Chocolate croissant. Is that your go-to food? I ask, thinking about his delicious smell.
Pretty much, yeah. And in case you were wondering,
he takes a bite of it.
I don't share chocolate.
I watch him chew, the smooth movements of his jaw and the bob of his Adam's apple as he swallows. It's mundane, something he does multiple times every day, and that makes this common occurrence so uncommon for me. It's a peek into his daily activities. As if I haven't gotten enough peeks. Disgusted, I lower my gaze. Thomas goes ahead and picks up the book, reading the title, effectively hiding his face.
Coming of Age as a Poet.
I'm doubly ashamed now. I don't want him to see how I'm struggling, how deep his words from the other day cut me. Can I have it back? I'm working. I tug it free from his grip and he lets me, revealing his playful gaze.
But you just said you're doing nothing.
I roll my eyes at his childish statement. I lied, okay?
Lying's a very bad habit, Miss Robinson.
He informs me. His voice anything but childish now.
It might land you in trouble.
I think I can handle a little trouble, Professor Abrams. He remains silent and drinks his coffee, watching me with speculation. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I want him to leave. I've committed so many crimes in the past couple of days that I can't even look at him without going hot and flush all over. I bet I resemble a tomato. And I don't even like tomatoes, especially on a hamburger. I always gave them to Caleb. He knows. Thomas knows I saw him last night.
Do I make you nervous, Layla?
No. I scoff, or try to. It comes out all squeaky and high.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
He murmurs, then takes another sip.
Have you done something?
What? No, I say quickly, playing with the pages of the book. Look, do you mind leaving? I'm working here.
How can you work here? Isn't it too loud?
I like it. It reminds me of home, I mumble.
Where did you live? A playground?
No, New York. He grows serious at my answer, and the crinkles around his eyes disappear as he studies me. Great. More microscopic observation. I should just tell him so this torture is over. Why can't I be normal and hide things like other people? Learn to eat your feelings, Layla. Learn it.
You miss the noise of the city,
he concludes, breaking my inner monologue. I nod with hesitation. Taking another sip of the coffee, he says.
Me too.
I barely suppress a gasp at his revelation. I'm shocked that he chose to tell me something personal about himself. Now, along with drowning in embarrassment about my nightly actions, I'm thoroughly confused.
What?
He asks. You're so weird. He arches his eyebrow at me. No, really. Why are you being so nice to me?
I'm always nice.
No, you're not. You hate me. You're always giving me a death glare like I'm responsible for, I don't know, terrorism or global warming or something. He chuckles or maybe laughs. It's a bark of a sound, rusty and awkward, but still. I made him do that. Me. Thomas goes to take a sip of his coffee, but I snatch it away before he can. I'm feeling gusty now. His weird laugh chuckle has made me brave. Embarrassment is still there, but like every time we're close, I become bolder. Thomas gives me a meaningful look as I take a sip,
What? You know I only steal stuff that gives me a high. I shrug. Shaking his head, he looks out the glass wall we're sitting by. I realize that outside of the labyrinth, Thomas is much more receptive to me. Outside of class, he's more playful, relaxed. The man really hates teaching, doesn't he? Nikki chooses this moment to gurgle and whip his fists up and down. I've been avoiding looking at him. Somehow entertaining sordid thoughts about Thomas and spying on him, and then looking at Nikki's innocent face feels wrong. Hey, Nikki, I greet him with a wave of my fingers. And the little man with the black beanie and fat cheeks turns his bright eyes to me. He lunges, as much as he can while still strapped to his daddy's chest, to grab my finger. Chuckling, I reach out and let him wrap his dimpled fist around it. Aren't you cute? I blow kisses at him, making him laugh. I wonder where you get it from. I widen my eyes at Thomas playfully. Thomas's eyes are anything but playful. They are twin peaks of intensity, and they are trained on me. I shift in my chair, craving some sort of friction between my legs. I want to keep looking, but I bring my focus back to Nikki. He's playing with my finger happily. Oh, look, you're wearing purple again. Good boy. You know what I think? I think you and me, we're soulmates. We should have matching outfits. Thomas breaks his silence.
Don't give him ideas. I don't want my son to dress up like a clown.
Affronted, I glare at him. Are you calling me a clown? What's wrong with what I wear? He pops a bit of croissant in his mouth.
What's that on your head?
My free hand goes up and I take off my hat, ruffling my hair. Waves fall around my face and I push them away. Thomas's gaze flicks over the loose mass of curls, and it has me wondering if something is stuck in there. My hair tends to catch things. Dead leaves, snow, twigs. I feel shy all of a sudden, so I glance down and clear my throat. This is a Russian-style Arctic fur hat.
And this is what? Russia?
I purse my lips at Thomas, and the crinkles around his eyes deepen as he chews on another piece of croissant. To Nikki, I say, tell him, Nikki. Tell him he's a judgmental moron. Nikki abandons my finger and stares at my hat. He coos at it while chewing on his finger. God, he's so adorable. I almost can't look at him. Do you want this Russian hat by any chance, little man? I offer it to him and he grabs at it, and then he promptly goes to drool on it. See? He loves it so much he wants to eat it. I throw Thomas a pitying glance. It's okay. Not everyone can be cool.
Don't get too excited. He's at a stage where everything looks like food and drool-worthy.
He whips out a tissue from his pocket, removes the hat from Nikki's mouth, and wipes off his drool. I take this tiny moment to study him and his expert movements.
Is this your way of not giving up?
Thomas asks, pointing to the open book I'd completely forgotten about. Shyness stabs my cheeks again and I lower my eyes. Maybe.
Show me what you've written so far.
I jerk my gaze up at him. No. And not that I've written anything. I can't write. I don't know how. Isn't that what the problem is? He shakes his head and snaps my notebook shut, making Nikki chuckle. Thanks for the support, buddy.
Now, I'm only going to say this once, so you better listen.
His professory voice makes me raise my hand as if we are in a classroom.
What?
That's exactly what you said in class, I say, thinking about the time he blew his lid when people talked about their favorite writers. I lower my voice and imitate him.
I'm only gonna say this once.
Nikki chortles again and I beam with pleasure.
Do you want the advice or not?
I nod enthusiastically.
These books are no help to you unless you actually write something. They can't teach you to write. They can only teach you to polish what you've written.
Sighing, he looks around, then settles his eyes on his coffee mug.
Wrap your hands around the coffee mug and close your eyes,
he tells me.
Confused, I don't do either of those things, and he shakes his head at me. He leans forward, careful of Nikki, and drapes his big, thick fingers over my hands, bringing them to the mug. My breath hitches at the very first contact between us. His rough, bumpy hands over my tiny, pale ones. It's jarring. It's what I imagine touching a lightning rod feels like. Electric, humming, bubbling with energy.
Layla, you with me?
Thomas asks as I gulp, jerking out a nod.
Close your eyes.
I do, because I've got no other option but to obey. He holds the functions of my body hostage with his touch, and my eyelids fall shut at his voice. I become awake, hypersensitive. I can hear the rasp of his breaths, punctuated by Nikki's gurgles. I feel the sun on my face even though we're sitting inside, and the morning is gray. I want to shift in my chair, rub my thighs together. I want to ask him to increase the pressure of his grip, so the feel of his skin is tattooed onto mine.
Tell me how the coffee mug feels.
Can you taste sound? I don't know, but I can taste his voice in this moment. It's viscous and thick and sweet. It's hot, but not as hot as your hands.
What else?
Under his palm, I move my fingers, feeling the rough contours of the coffee mug. It's yellow in color with a brown-ridged sleeve. It's rough, scratchy, but the roughness of your hands feels so much better.
And?
I try to feel more and come into contact with something metallic. I bend my digit and touch something smooth with the knuckle. It's the wedding band, cool against his patent heat, icy cold. The rhythm of my breathing changes, or maybe it's his altered breaths, choppy and broken. Feeling the wrongness of it, I snap my fingers straight and away, taking refuge in the sensations of our skin rubbing together. It feels like sunshine. Like, just by touching it, I'm awake and alert, and I don't know, just alive. And I'm not talking about the stupid coffee mug. Thomas removes his hand, and I'm forced to open my eyes. There's color on his cheeks. Not quite red, but something similar that brightens up his flesh. It flips something in my chest. He shrugs.
There you have it. A cup of coffee is a pocket full of sunshine for you. Writing isn't only about technique, though that's important. It's not about what you see. It's about what you feel. You have to go in deeper. Turn stones. Look where you'd rather not look to be able to write. Ergo, you don't need these books right now.
I put my hands in my lap, covering one with the other. A poor attempt to preserve the heat left by him. Is that what you do? Look where you'd rather not?
Sometimes.
Aren't you afraid of what you'll find? I don't have to wonder what I'll find when I look inside me. A selfish, crazy girl who fell in the wrong kind of love, so I'd rather not look.
Terrified,
he murmurs, answering my question.
Art is painful, Layla. It's potentially dangerous, explosive. It takes everything from you, sometimes more than you can afford. It's a beast, and it's always starving. You feed it and feed it until you have nothing left.
He sucks in a breath.
But you don't mind because you'd rather chase the high of creating something than live in darkness. It's insanity.
It's the most truthful and the most miserable thing he's ever said to me. His words lodge somewhere in my cracked heart, breaking it further. I realize he could be talking about love, an insane, hungry beast who takes and takes.
Are you going to take that?
Thomas asks after a while.
What?
Vibrations echo on my thigh, alerting me that my phone is ringing. I take it out of my pocket and almost drop it like I'm holding an icicle in my hand. It's Caleb. Caleb, with his green eyes and dirty blonde hair grinning at me through my phone screen. I don't understand. I keep staring at it, keep listening to the shrill tune, hoping it will change, hoping Caleb's face will dissolve, hoping this is a joke. It has to be, right? Why would he call me after 2 years? The phone stops ringing, and I manage to take a halting breath.
Layla.
I look at Thomas like I don't remember him. Before I can say something, the phone rings again, buzzing on the table. Without a second thought, I hop up from my seat, gather my things, and throw Thomas a distracted glance. I have to go. I run out of the cafe as if Caleb is here, rather than in fucking Massachusetts, as if Caleb has come to tell me how much he hates me. Chapter 11. No, Emma is shaking her head. I won't wear that. I won't. Why not? I look at her in the mirror, and then back to the dress in my hands. What's wrong with it? The color, it's orange. Tangerine, I say for the millionth time. It's tangerine. They're the same thing. She puts her hand on her hip and turns to me. I just don't know about this. She walks over to my bed and plops down on the pile of clothes. Do you trust me? I ask her seriously, and she laughs at my expression. I thrust the dress in her face to make her stop, and she swats at it. Just try it, okay? Tangerine is fucking awesome. It'll look great on you, trust me. When she throws me a dubious look, I add, Dylan's gonna love it. It's like you're wearing sunshine. My lips curve up in a smile at the word. A cup of coffee is a pocket full of sunshine for you. Wow, aren't you the poet? Emma teases. Yeah, I might be. I pull her up and shove her in the direction of my en suite. Now, go change. She gulps. What if he doesn't like me? You know, we've been friends for so long and now everything is changing. I don't... Do you love him? She rolls her eyes. Yeah. Then it's enough. Love is magical. It can do things. Things you can't even imagine. I smile. Just have a little faith. Okay. Emma returns my smile with one of her own and leaves to change. I cross my fingers and toes, hoping, begging that what I said turns out to be true for her. My prayers are interrupted when I hear the depressing buzz of my phone from somewhere on the bed. Caleb. That's all I think about as I frantically search for it under the pile of clothes and books and rumpled sheets. By the time I manage to find it, I miss the call, but it wasn't from Caleb. It was my mom. What was I thinking? Of course Caleb wouldn't call me. Maybe he butt-dialed me earlier or something. We have nothing to say to each other. The phone starts up again. My mom. Hello? I say as I try to tamp down my anxious heart. I have a bad feeling about this. Layla? How are you? Even though her tone is distracted, I can't stop the pleasure of hearing from her. Her voice is soft and always manages to stay at the same decibel, but her face changes when she is angry, becomes even more beautiful, painfully beautiful. It's hard to look at her. I'm great. How are you? Good. Good. I wanted to talk to you about Henry's party. Right. Sure, I remember. It's next week. Don't worry, I'm not going to be there. I made a mess at her Valentine's party last year. I was drunk and high, and I vomited all over the Cupid ice sculpture. It was in the papers. Mom was so embarrassed that she decided to banish me. Since then, I've barely been to the city or her parties. Yes, that's very thoughtful of you, but I just wanted to remind you anyway. It's imperative that you not come. Okay, I won't be there. Pinky promise. I flop down on my back, my toes grazing the floor. How pathetic is it that your own mother calls you to remind you about your non-invitation? It's not a joke, Layla. This party is especially important, and I don't want anything to ruin it. Meaning, I don't want you to ruin it. Care to share? I ask, curling a strand of my hair. Pardon me? My mom would never say excuse me or sorry. That's too common and uncultured for her. Pardon me, on the other hand, is a sign of being ladylike, which I am not, by the way. About the party, what's so important about it? It's just Henry's birthday. It's not important. But you just said it's important. No, I didn't. Frowning, I sit up. Mom, why are you being weird? Layla, she sighs again. Mom, just tell me. I might decide to show up after all. Instant fear. I can almost hear her gasping. Oh, the horror of her crazy daughter showing up to ruin everything. I'm like the plague. I hear the tinkle of her bracelets through the phone. She changes hands when she is uncomfortable. Caleb has agreed to attend. Cold seeps into my bones, starting up in my ears, traveling down the side of my neck, pervading my entire body. I can fucking feel it moving. Caleb? Yes, he responded to my invitation. Even though Caleb doesn't have anything to do with Henry, my mom insists on having him around for every occasion. Caleb is the son she never had. Okay, I mumble. And I don't want to spook him. I clutch the phone harder as she continues. Because I want him to move back to the city. His place is here, working for his father's company. I want things to go as planned. My eyes scrunch closed. Sure, yeah, it's better if I'm not there. The pressure increases and tears threaten to fill the shuttered confines of the sockets. I'm glad we're on the same page. Yeah. There's silence after that, long and stretched. I don't know why we're holding on to the connection, why we're listening to each other breathe. Maybe Mom wants to add something. Maybe I'm afraid to be alone after she hangs up. I'm still thinking about the maybes when Mom speaks up. Okay, then. Call me if you need anything. That's what she always says at the end of a conversation. Yeah, I will. I won't. I never do. A click and she is gone. My tears lose the battle and fall down my cheeks. A river of guilt and sadness. Maybe even anger. I'm not sure. I fall back on the bed and curl into a fetal position with the phone tucked beneath my cheek. Sobs rack my body. Guttural, animalistic sounds I don't recognize. Never thought I could even make. I never thought my chameleon heart could break this much. I've never felt so alone in my entire life. So unloved. Such a freak of nature. I feel a soft hand on my shoulder. Layla? Emma says softly, glowing in the tangerine dress. Layla, what happened? What's wrong? Why are you crying? Through hot tears, I look at her. She is a stranger to me. We hardly know anything about each other. She doesn't know how rotten I am, the things I have done. Her concern for me is unwarranted. If she knew, she wouldn't be here, consoling me, looking distressed on my behalf. If I were stronger, a better person, I'd turn her away. I wouldn't grab onto her blind kindness. But I'm not a good person. Haven't I proved that already? I sit up, turn on my side, and hug her like a child. Emma is surprised, but she puts her arm around me anyway. I tuck my face in her neck. It's unfamiliar. It smells of watermelon, sweet and comforting. She pats my back. Hey, what's wrong? What happened? Nothing. I clutch her harder. I need the connection. I need to know I'm not repulsive, like my own mother thinks. We stay like this for a few minutes before I move away, embarrassed. I'm sorry for pouncing on you.
It's okay. I don't mind.
What happened? I can't tell her. I can't. She'll hate me and then she'll leave.
It's nothing, I sniff, smiling awkwardly.
Then I swing my legs down and jump to my feet, clapping.
Let's get you all ready for your date. Emma looks at me like I'm crazy.
I'm contained in a bubble, thick as glass. I can barely hear and see through it. It feels like I've traveled back in time and I'm going through the same cold numbness I felt when Caleb left. I drench that numbness with Grey Goose or pot or creating chaos in the world. My favorite was drunk driving. People would look at me with accusing eyes, would honk at me, and I'd laugh. It soothed something inside me. Being accused. I was a bad person, and people needed to know that. Being good sucks, by the way. I need the drugging fumes of pot to forget Caleb's out-of-the-blue call. Why the fuck did he call me? Maybe to uninvite me to the party like my mom did? It's all for the best, really. I don't care about the party, nor do I want to see Caleb. I never want to see him again if I can help it. How would I even face him? What would I say? Everything is fine. So why do I feel like crying? I don't even realize class is over until I hear the screech of chairs shifting across the cement floor. People are murmuring and packing up their bags, ready to leave. Emma puts her hand on my shoulders.
Hey, you ready to go?
Yeah, yes, let me pack up. I've just put my notebook in my backpack and picked up my winter gear when I hear my name called.
Miss Robinson, I'd like to see you after class.
I gulp as I hear Thomas use his formal, curt voice. I don't know if I'm strong enough to confront him today. I tell Emma to go ahead without me, and she leaves with Dylan. The class is almost empty as I shuffle to Thomas's desk, leaving my belongings behind. He watches me with open fascination, his arms folded across his chest. I glance up at him and catalog the separate parts of his appearance. Maroon shirt paired with black jeans, wild hair, glinting eyes, sleek lines of his jaw, thumb grazing his lower lip in soft caresses. I want to both keep looking at him and escape from his masculine beauty. It's too soothing and too overwhelming for my senses. This is the second time he stopped me after class. The first time he told me I had a crush on him, which turned out to be true. I wonder what he'll say now.
How'd you like the class today, Miss Robinson?
Busted. I wasn't paying attention. He knows it. I know it. But I still keep up the charade. Great, as usual.
Is that right?
I nod, keeping my gaze on the desk.
Remember what I said, Layla?
His powerful, rich voice creates a buzz inside my body.
Lying might land you in trouble.
I lift up my eyes to look at him. The buzz escalates into a restless trembling and words slip out of my mouth in a thick whisper. I'm not afraid of a little trouble. His thumb arcs in a long sweep across his lip, before he straightens his arms and thrusts them in his pockets. The silence between us has a certain drama to it. Thomas is preparing to unveil something. My pulse is pounding.
Who's Caleb?
My breath tangles up in my throat and all I can do is gasp. It's both quiet and loud. A breeze and a gust. How does he know that name? The name of the boy I love and Thomas's low, thick voice sounds wrong. Caleb is so gentle, so soft. His name needs to be spoken quietly, with reverence. He is nothing like Thomas, or me for that matter. Thomas frowns when I don't say anything.
Did he do something to you?
What? The idea is so insane that I can only stand there and mutter useless words.
The guy who called you yesterday, he explains.
Did he do something to you? Did he hurt you in some way?
I shake my head once, still reeling from the fact that Thomas knows anything about Caleb. It's none of your business. It's a default response, but instead of coming out commanding, my voice wobbles and distorts into a broken whisper. It is none of his business. It's no one's business what happened with Caleb. Even as I think it, confession balloons up in my chest and rushes into my mouth. For a split second, I entertain the thought of telling him everything, every single thing. It's a novel feeling, completely alien and terrifying. I can't. I can't tell him what I did. He'll hate me. But I like that. I need the accusation. Someone to remind me that I deserve to be shunned by my own mother. Tell me how bad I am, how pathetic and sick and insane. God, I'm so confused. I'm leaving, I tell him, because if I don't leave, I'll spill all my secrets. I make to go, but his fingers clamp around my wrist, stopping me from moving. This is the second time he's touched me, skin to skin. This time around isn't as shocking, but it still is vibrant. A boom in the air and then all falls silent. The world goes mute before it starts back up. I know the door is open. I know there are people in the vicinity. I know he shouldn't be holding my hand this way, but I don't care. I can't. Like him. His fingers are magic. Thomas tugs me toward him, forcing my pelvis against the desk. The edge bites into my bone, but I don't wince. I lean into it.
What'd he do to you?
He asks again, harshly. The lines of his beautiful face are stiff and there is a severe glint in his eyes. He is angry. At what? Maybe it's there on my behalf. It's such a sweet delusion. I can't help but feel warm as I shake my head at him. Nothing.
Layla,
he warns. His raspy voice, like his touch, is a form of hypnosis. My body relaxes, gives in. My rationality is trapped under the rubble of my languid, obedient muscles. He didn't love me. Ever.
And you loved him?
His fingers flex over my wrist, gripping even tighter. Does he realize how tight he is holding me? What does my skin feel like to him? Yes. I loved him. Do I still love him, though? I don't know. I've been in pain and agony for so long that I can't really tell. The angles of Thomas's face shift. He looks at me in a way he never has before. In a new light, maybe. I bask in it, even though I don't deserve his fresh eyes. I'm like you, I want to say. A fleeting thought enters my mind. Maybe I was always meant to find him. To find the symmetry to my disfigured soul. Maybe I was always meant to find Emma and Dylan, too. I was meant to pick up their tiny broken hearts and patch them back up. I wonder how I can help Thomas do that. How can I mend his cracked heart? Licking my lips, I tell him. I'm the one who hurt him. His blue gaze smolders, as if my words are gasoline, stoking the flame.
What did you do?
I forced him to sleep with me. There. I said it. It's out there. Thomas remained silent, waiting for me to explain. We were at this party. He was, actually. I just went there to see him. He was leaving for college the next month, and I was desperate. I'd always loved him, but he never returned my feelings, so I got him drunk. I cringe, but keep going. But that's not all. I got him high, too, and I lied about it. I told him it was just a cigarette, but it wasn't, and then I took advantage of him. I remember the dazed look in Caleb's eyes as he kept shooting me lazy smiles.
That was the night his touch lingered on me. He caressed my cheeks while talking. His arms looped around my waist as we danced. We'd never danced so close to each other before. I could hear his racing heartbeat, and for those few seconds, I pretended it was for me. Not because of the marijuana and the liquor. I'd never felt so loved and so disgusted before. I still don't understand it. It was awful. But like a dog, I lapped up his attention, his love. Because what other choice did I have? He was leaving. He didn't love me for who I was. My body was the only thing I had left to give, and I knew he wouldn't take it sober, so I tampered with his judgment. We ended up in a room, away from the party, and I kissed him. He didn't respond at first, but then he gave in, and I take in a quivering breath. And then I took my clothes off and put his hands on me. I could see he was confused and didn't want to, but I straddled his lap and yeah, we slept together. I thought if I gave him my virginity, he'd come to love me. But he left the next day. I blink once, and a single tear streams down my cheek. So I hurt him. He was my best friend. My only friend. And he was my stepbrother. And I forced him to have sex with me. That's all of it. All my ugly parts. All the reasons why I'm a freak. Why I've been banished to my tower. Why my own mother hates me. I wonder what she'd do if she found out what I did to Caleb. She knows I love him, but she doesn't know how many lines I've crossed for that love. Thomas lets go of my wrist and the pressure on my lower body eases. The pain in my pelvis becomes a dull throb. He is letting me go. It brings forth more of my tears. Salty, useless water that never fixes anything. He's disgusted by me. And who could blame him? A sob is preparing to escape, but it dies down into a hiccup when I feel his rough hand envelop my jaw. His magic hands are on me. This is the third time, and it's by far the most intimate. His calluses drag across my trembling chin, stabilizing it, calm, keeping me calm, like some sort of anti-anxiety drug. I'm scared, I whisper brokenly.
Of what?
Of always being this miserable and alone. I don't say it, because we have come closer now, and I've lost my voice. I can see the pores of his skin, the hidden flecks in his irises. His eyes sweep across my face, left and right, up and down. I palm his hand that cups my cheek. The dusting of hair over his knuckles grazes my skin. It teases my senses, liquefying them, heating them up. I want to suck on his fingers. I want to taste them after he touches me. Taste his flesh after it comes in contact with mine. I'm assaulted by images of him, his fingers inside me. Inside my needy core. Patting it, soothing it, stroking it. I picture them curling, hooking inside my channel to coax out my juices, and then feeding them to me. The desire is so strong. So alive that I can't stop myself from nuzzling in his hand. He grows even hazier, covered by a certain mist, sparkling. Fuck it. I'm doing it. I'm tasting his skin. Just one lick, I promise myself. It won't hurt anyone. I turn my face and peek my tongue out. I make contact with the juncture where his fingers meet the palm. The touch is barely existent. It barely registers in this vast, vast universe. But his taste bursts in my mouth. The strongest, most provocative flavor of salt and chocolate. Belatedly, I realize he's grown rigid. The haze clears and I'm jarred back into reality.
I move away from the desk, out of his reach, but he's staying still. His hand falls to his side, lax. I'm sorry, I blurt out, ashamed of myself, ashamed of my lack of impulse control. Kara was right. I need to work on it. I need to do better. He doesn't say anything. His speechlessness and his blank face scare me more than his shout would have. I would have gladly taken his bark over this silence. God, I am so stupid. I have to go. Chapter 12. It's Saturday, and I'm at the Alchemy with Emma, Dylan, and Matt. We find a table in the middle of the room, and Emma thumps the big bag of goodies down on it. It's prompt night for the labyrinth, and Emma is in charge of producing the prompts.
Explain to me one more time why you need this giant-ass bag again,
Matt says, taking off his coat and hanging it on the chair as he takes a seat. Dylan gives him a disdainful look.
She's got her prompts in it, dumbass.
Emma smiles in pleasure, her eyes on the bag as she looks for something. It's adorable how shy she is in front of him when she's normally so self-assured. Dylan and Emma have gone on a few dates this week. Turns out Dylan loved the tangerine. I knew it.
And why can't you show them a picture or something on your phone?
He bumps his shoulder with mine.
Back me up here, Layla. This freaking bag is a monstrosity.
I don't have a problem with it, actually, I say. It's kind of fun to look at something while writing about it. When Emma told me about the labyrinth's prompt night, my first reaction was panic. I didn't think I could be a part of it. I wasn't prepared. I haven't even read all the books I own. Reading has become a vital part of my life now. In the past week, I've only roamed on the street once. I haven't been to Thomas's house at all. I stay up late reading. There's so much to discover, and I've been living inside this fog for so long. I feel like time is running out on me. I'll probably die before reading all the books out there. I try to calm myself. I'm here to be a part of something greater than me. Art, and I don't have to be perfect. The only thing I should be worried about is seeing Thomas. It's been 6 days since I cried in front of him, told him my ugly love story, and sort of licked his hand, trying to taste him. Since then, I've seen him all around campus, at Creme and Beans with Nikki, in the corridors at the labyrinth when Emma dragged me to a play reading. I've even seen him in the park, at the bench. The one time I went out at night. He was smoking and battling with himself as usual, and I was hiding behind the tree. It's like he's everywhere. My secret keeper. The one person who knows what I did. And he is disgusted by me. He never looks at me. To him, I'm invisible. Somehow, this hurts even more. Because deep down, I thought he could relate to me, but he doesn't. I really am a freak of nature. The front door of the bar opens and in strides Sarah Turner, followed by Professor Masters and Thomas. The snowflakes swirl behind his back as he enters, and the door swings shut.
Hello, children.
Professor Masters greets us in a jovial voice as he saunters forward. There is a chorus of chuckles and "Hi, Professor," around the room. Without paying attention to anyone, Thomas breaks off from the trio and heads for the bar. Sarah throws him an annoyed look, but Professor Masters steers her toward their destination. Thomas orders a drink and sits on the bar stool, his long legs straddling the small seat. He takes off his jacket, revealing a plain gray t-shirt that stretches across his shoulders and biceps. His jean-covered thighs bulge as he bounces his right leg with impatience. The bartender sets down a chocolate martini in front of him and I look away, embarrassed. His weakness for chocolate awakens something raw and melty inside my stomach. I haven't thought about what I'll do come Monday. Will I go back to class? Will I hide and never show my face again? Emma gets up from beside me, greets the room, and explains the instructions. She digs inside her bag and fishes something out. So the first prompt is this bottle of hot sauce. You have to write a short poem, no more than 20 lines, with whatever comes to mind when you see the red bottle with H-O-T written on it. I'm going to pass this around for a bit so you guys can look at it. My first thought is that I hate hot sauce. I'm more of a sweet-loving person. In fact, I'm the only sweet-loving person in my family, or the families I had over the years. My mom, Caleb, my dad, Caleb's dad, even Henry, they all shy away from sweet things. The thought of Caleb makes me aware of the phone in my jacket pocket. Since those missed calls at Creme and Beans, he's called several times, but I haven't picked up. I was hoping he'd leave a message or something so I'd know what it's about, but he hasn't. Why does he keep calling me? As impulsive as I am, a strange fear is keeping me from taking his call. Emma bumps my elbow and tells me to get writing. Write. Hot sauce. I nibble at my pen, trying to think. No, trying to feel. How does hot sauce make me feel? H-O-T. Feel. Feel. I close my eyes and the first thing I see is Thomas's face. His beautiful, intense gaze. How every molecule of my body, every inch of my flesh burns when he is near. How he has the power to change the weather, cold to hot. Gasping, my eyes whip open. Thomas Abrams is a fire breather. He breathes flames and lust. Makes me forget everything and say yes. Yes to obsession. Yes to stalking. Yes to insanity. Yes to licking. With shaking hands, I begin to write and capture him in words. The pen moves and the words flow out. They keep flowing without my knowledge. All I can feel is the heat seesawing through my body. Next thing I know, I'm jolted by Emma's clap and shrill voice. All right, guys, it's time to stop. Put down your pens. Murmurs escalate and the room breaks out in conversation as Emma asks someone to volunteer their poem first. With flushed cheeks, I pocket my small notebook. While the entire room is busy, I get up and shuffle into the hallway in the back. I need to get to the ladies' room and calm myself down. I rub my arms at the unexpected chill in the dank hallway and take a deep breath. My legs can barely support themselves. Is this how poets feel when they put feelings into words? Is this how Thomas feels? It's like bleeding. It's like running for miles and running out of breath. Before I can reach my destination, I'm being hauled into a dark, tiny room. I don't even have time to squeal before the flimsy wooden door is shut, and I'm surrounded by a very familiar heat. It's Thomas. He has me trapped inside what looks to be a storage room, his hand banded around my elbow, pushing me back against the dank wall. Thomas? I'm panting. What's happening? What are you doing? His chiseled face is a study of thick shadows and thin slices of light under the flickering yellow bulb. The only bright spots on his features are those fire-starting eyes of his. I can smell the delicious smoke rising from my body, can feel the sting. Now that the initial shock is gone, my body sags, relieved to be the center of his attention after days. He sees us. There are things to worry about, I know that, but I can't muster the energy to. Thomas? I whisper when it's clear he won't say anything. What are you doing? His breaths are choppy, short jabs of air inhaled and exhaled as he stares at every inch of my face.
Do you still love him?
What?
Do you still love that guy?
Yes.
How much?
My breaths match his, succinct and sharp. I study him, this man in front of me. There's a hint of vulnerability to him.
His usually cool persona is frayed. Is it because I told him my story? Maybe he relates to me after all. Thomas, what's going on?
How much do you love him, Layla? Do you love him so much that you hate yourself? That you can't stand your own sight? Do you constantly think about how to fix it? How to make it better? How to be better?
He isn't merely frayed. He's coming apart. Naked agony dances on his features. It's too bright and glaring. It's too similar to mine. But I'm not worried about that right now. I'm worried about him. Yes, I whisper. I lift my hand and press it to his stubbled face. His cheekbone is arched and high, seemingly made of granite as it pulses beneath my palm. But I'm so tired of it, I admit, and his eyes flare, fire-breathing eyes. I wonder why I didn't notice it before. It's so obvious now. They never fail to start a fire in my soul. He crowds me against the wall, as if sinking his hard body into mine. But there isn't any touch involved. His frame sort of hovers over me, heating me up, jump-starting my nerves. I'm a mesh of live wires, firing lust and adrenaline. I'm sticky as sugar and drunk as whiskey. Thomas arranges his body and places both palms on the wall, caging me in. The vein on his bicep becomes taut, a purple string tugging on my senses. I watch him watch my parted lips, and suddenly it's the only piece of my body I can feel. My mouth, throbbing, puffy, swollen with the need.
Me too,
he whispers, almost to himself. I wasn't meant to hear it, but I did. Again, I'm hit by a storm of desire to kiss him better. It's a tornado, an avalanche in my body. And in one breathless moment, I decide to go for it. It's okay. I can take the blame for it later. I break the rules and reach up and kiss him. A feathery peck on his plump lips. It's a kiss of solidarity. A kiss that intends to tell him I understand. But one isn't enough. It only manages to ratchet up my lust. So I give him another. This time on the corner of his mouth. And then another one on his jaw. It's not enough. These small, barely there touches. I want more. But I won't take it. I'll be good. I'll only give. Abruptly, he fists my curls and stops me. I look at him fearfully, ready to apologize, not for the kiss but for being the kisser. His gaze reflects passion, stark, raving need, and I shiver, despite wearing layers and sweating with his heat.
Are you trying to kiss me, Layla?
He rasps, flexing his fingers on my makeshift ponytail. He couldn't tell. Blush rises to the surface and I know I'm glowing like a neon sign. Swallowing, I nod. Yes. He inches closer to me, still not touching, as impossible as that is, but infinitely closer.
You want to kiss me, Miss Robinson? You do it right.
Oh, God. Does he have to call me that? Now? Here? My spine arches on its own, and my heavy tits graze the contours of his shuddering chest. How? I ask innocently, belying the daring action of my body. His stern professory voice is doing things to me, making me wild, uncontrolled. For a second, he's silent, just watching. I'm afraid he'll back out from whatever this is, whatever insanity we're about to commit. But then I sense the shift in the liquor-laced air as he opens his mouth and growls.
Like this.
Twisting my hair in his grasp, he swallows my lips in his mouth. He sucks on the shape of my sensitive flesh, and all I can do is let him. I put my palms on his shoulders, feeling the heated muscles under the soft material of his t-shirt. His chest shifts and slides over my breasts like